I'm recording this, so I think you have to click yes to continue. But as we record those questions, then what we'll do is we'll be able to respond to those, and we'll post this whole thing online afterwards for people that couldn't make the Q&A but may have some questions, for them to get their responses. So if there's any general comments about what you liked or didn't like about the virtual pumpkin field day, feel free to type those in the chat box, as we go along, just for general discussion purposes. I'm sure everyone is aware that the reason we did this was because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Ohio State didn't really want any gatherings bigger than 10 people, and we usually draw about 30 or 35 to the pumpkin field day. So it just wasn't going to work out, unfortunately. For my safety and your safety, all the mixing and all that. So I saved you a drive out to the station. I saved you $5, for our normal fee for coming to the research farm. So hopefully that worked out for you. So what I thought we would do is kind of take any questions in the order that they appeared in the field day. And so you see up there that the order was the biofumigation, and then we had the weed section, the powdery mildew section, and then the insects, and then the hybrid section. I guess I'll just throw it out there. If anyone has any questions or comments about the mustard cover crop piece, this would be your chance to do that. This again was research that we did last 2 years, kind of using a novel idea of planting the cover crop and then using that to try to tamp down or control the disease. It hasn't shown a lot of promise these first 2 years, but things like this, they take a couple of years with different weather factors that build into it. You can't always get the perfect conditions for the perfect disease or insect. So we just do it a couple of years, and then we see, what the results are. So this is the second year, and again, not seeing a whole lot at the research station, but at that one farm in Cincinnati, I'm probably going to go down again tomorrow, and it's probably going to be loaded full of stuff. So I'll have more to say later. But if anyone has any comments about that, any interest or observations, feel free to type those into the chat box at the bottom. If you're having trouble with the chat box and you just have to ask a question, you can unmute yourself. I think you might know how to do that. Just like a little icon, just click on that, and we can kind of take your question that way. So going once, going twice, going three times. Any questions about the mustard cover crop? Okay, I do not see any. So we're going to go ahead and go on to the second topic, which was Tony Dobble's topic about the herbicides and the weed screen. Oh, there's a question. What kind of mustard? There's actually three different kinds of mustards that were used. One of them was a Pacific Gold. One of them was Caliente 199, and the last one was Caliente Rojo, Rojo. So those are the three mustards that were involved in the study. Getting back to the weed study with Tony Dobbles, does anyone have any questions about what they saw there? We had the new Reflex label that Tony covered very well, I thought. We tried to show you different views of the plots and what the herbicides did for different weed combinations. Again, it's like the Tale of Two Cities. Doing that study kind of midsummer, late summer, totally different weed flush than we got in the spring. And it's just night and day. So we're going to try to repeat that study, I think, sometime in the spring of next year, and we're going to try to get some injury on some crops so you can kind of see what that looks like. But if anyone has any comments about any of the treatments, any of the herbicides, anything like that, timing, rates, those kinds of things, feel free to put that in the chat box. Or if it's too long of a question to chat, then you can just go ahead and unmute yourself and give it to us using your voice. Yes, Celeste, you had
Well, I guess
something.
one thing I'm wondering with that, I was interested in the injury, particularly to butternut squash. Do you have any idea if it's related to other factors like the age of the plant or the temperature or you know, anything at all? Or is it just no matter how you use it, it's more likely to affect butternut?
Tony, what do you think?
My guess is it's going to be no matter how you use it, because, I mean, the label clearly stated that severe injury to butternut squash. And I think Doug Duhan at Ohio State looked at this, and I didn't see his results, but I'm sure there is enough data to back that up that, you know, if they're willing to put that out there, that I would think under any circumstance is going to cause that injury.
But again, I wonder, like, what's the trade-off? You know, with weeds being such a problem, even if there is some injury, is it still like worth using, you think? And it does grow out of the injury, or you think that injury really is something that if you were growing butternut squash, you really should probably not use the product? Do you know?
From what I read, I don't think I would personally use it, because I mean, it clearly states it's severe injury. So, you know, but one thing it says too, and even with pumpkins, is to do, you know, we used to call it like a bioassay to bring some soil in, but, you know, plant them and see what happens. I mean, not every variety is probably going to have the same amount of injury. So maybe you have a variety that, you know, wasn't so susceptible to the injury, but sometimes there's varieties that are really susceptible and just get killed. So mm-hmm. I don't know, it's worth looking into though.
Yeah, like I said, I think we're going to repeat this experiment next year and put a couple of butternuts in there and a couple of other squash, excuse me. And if it's injury like you see with sandia sometimes, you know, it kind of stunts the plant, it kind of slows it down, but it, you know, grows out of it in a week or two. I get the impression from the label, like Tony does, that this is not that kind of injury. This is sort of, you know, seedling death kind of injury. It's likely not to grow out of it, but again, never having seen what it does, I can't say firsthand, but my guess would be if you were just to experiment with it and you got the right conditions, it would probably kill or severely stunt the butternut. And I don't know about the squash, how bad that would be. The pumpkin seems the most resistant to it. But again, it just sort of depends on the rate you use and the conditions.
I guess in a way you could say it's not surprising because butternut is a different species. You know, it's not just a different cultivar. Mm-hmm. It is a different species than the other cucurbits. So I suppose it might make sense.
Yeah. So are there any other observations about the herbicide trial that you might want to bring up to Tony or the rest of the panel or the other participants? If you have anything, feel free to type that in the chat box. One thing that I'll mention, we'll probably get to a little bit later, is that we used a 3D camera and took pictures of the entire research trial. And so if you haven't seen that on that pumpkin page where you watch the video, it's at the toward the bottom, just kind of keep scrolling down and you can kind of walk up and down in between all the treatments there and see kind of what the herbicide did, what weeds are there, in addition to, you know, Tony's comments in the video that we took that you saw. So it's kind of an experiment for us to see how well that new 3D technology works. We learned a little bit about, you know, how we used it this time, and I think we'll make it even more useful next time. But, you know, check it out and see what you think. Again, the trial this time of year was a totally different trial than I think we'd get if we did it in the spring. So any last questions about the weeds? Okay, seeing none, I think we'll go ahead and move on. So the third part of the whole field day was the powdery mildew fungicide trial. In there, you know, what I showed was basically seven different treatments. I did not show you the full treatment combinations because it just would have been kind of overwhelming. But I think what I'll do is I'll go ahead and post those different combinations so you can see them. You know, they're certainly not secret by any means, but what I tried to give you was the main product of interest. And the alternate partners were almost always either Vivando or Procure. Those two seem to match up well with the first seven treatments. And so that's generally what the alternating partners were. The other seven treatments, some of them we'd seen before, those products, and nothing experimental was used. All that product is labeled. So we're just kind of showing you some efficacy of currently labeled products. So are there any observations or questions you might have had about that powdery mildew trial? Just type those in the chat box, or if it's something a little bit longer, feel free to unmute yourself and let me know. There's only about another six people outside of the host on here, so we probably have time to have you say it versus type it. That's easier.
Well, Jim, I'll just throw out a little question. Is there anything else in the pipeline? You guys are always worried about resistance starting to pop up with things not working as well. Do you know, are there any other products getting close to registration? Do you have any idea?
I know there's two products. One of them is from BASF, and I can't think of the active ingredient right now, but it's something that they don't have labeled on pumpkin yet, but they want to. Maybe they were hoping by this year, but this year didn't make it, so maybe next year. I know that Corteva is working on a suite of products as well. They've got some trials at the research station that only they are working on at this point. And so they're not quite ready for demonstration in my type of trial yet. So yeah, there's a couple of products coming, but I would say in general, there are a lot of products to choose from for powdery mildew. I mean, you've got all kinds of, you know, frac numbers to alternate with, a good suite of protectants and systemics and translaminar materials. So I don't think that, resistance is going to be that much of an issue right now in powdery. We had some products that were kind of fading the last couple of years that, you know, used to be some of our standards, but, you know, this year so far, they're actually looking better than some of our products that looked really good the past couple of years. So every year is kind of up and down a little bit. I don't think there's really any product that I would say is totally failing and should not be used. You know, of course, products like Bravo and Mancozeb, those are decent protectants, but they really don't give very good powdery mildew control. So when I hear people say that they use this this program of alternating Bravo and Mancozeb or Mancozeb, I kind of go, oh, how's your powdery mildew control? Oh yeah, it's great. And I just kind of go, well, I'd have to see it to believe that, because those products don't usually look very good by themselves in the trial. Any other thoughts or observations about the powdery mildew trial? Dimethamorph. I don't know what that product is. Is that Randman? What is that? I don't know what dimethamorph is. Sorry, Bob. Is that for DM? Or I don't recognize that active. That must be for Downy. Well, I don't want to take everyone's time to look that up now, but I'll look that up and let you know. But I'm guessing that's a Downy product. That doesn't ring any bells for me for a powdery mildew product. And so far this year, we really haven't had an official claim of downy mildew on any pumpkin. There's been on cucumber, but you know, I see things at the station. It looks like it's downy, but it really hasn't really materialized into a big loss yet. When it's really hot out, downy doesn't do very well in those conditions. So it kind of, yeah, Acrobat. Okay, yeah. I haven't used Acrobat. I typically just go back and forth between like Randman and Zampro and some Zing. Use the protectants of Mancozeb and Bravo as well. But there's a whole raft of products for downy. But anyhow, when it's hot outside, really downy isn't a threat. It's only when it cools off and you get these heavy dewy mornings is that really, really an issue. I know that Mary Hosbeck at Michigan State does a lot of work with downy, and she puts out a list every year. I don't recall if Acrobat is on it or not, but like I said, I don't think that it's not. So I'm sure that it's still fairly good at this point in time. Any other thoughts or concerns about powdery mildew?
Okay, one other really quick question, Jim. Is it still continuing that trend that it's showing up just a little earlier every year, like sometimes even in June, instead of the traditional, it used to be the end of July?
Yeah, I think what you have there is, I think I was talking to Tony about this a week or two ago. What you're seeing is people have transplants in the greenhouse, and you know, that when powdery mildew gets started in a greenhouse, it's really tough to get rid of. Then they take those transplants outside, put them in the field, and a week or two later, they go, oh, we've got powdery mildew. Well, you know, you really didn't have it in the field. You kind of had that from the greenhouse. But in general, you know, it used to be August 1st or thereabouts was when we'd see powdery mildew. In the last 2 or 3 years, it's really been more like mid-July, which is 2 weeks early, you know, which is, that's considerably early. That's enough, another spray or two, you know, so that's pretty early, I would say. This year for us at the research station, even though we planted actually earlier on time, you know, June 1st, direct seeded, we didn't see powdery mildew until July 27th. And that's almost 2 weeks after we would typically see it, you know, so I don't know what's going on, you know, with powdery mildew. But this year was a little unusual in that respect. I mean, when we saw it, it was literally like one pustule in the field. I mean, it was just not to be found at all. So I don't know. But yeah, I would say mid-July, early to mid-July, you should be looking. Anytime from mid-July to August 1st, you should be able to find it in just about any field, you know, that you're looking in. Now, if you have a powdery mildew tolerant or resistant hybrid, then that might delay the formation of colonies a little bit, because that's the function, you know, of that resistant plant material. But you're not going to go into, you know, mid-August, late August and say, I don't have any powdery, I haven't been spraying at all. That I think is unrealistic. There's a question from Terry about nozzles and water. I think I addressed this in the video, but I said we use hollow cone nozzles, and spray about 65 PSI. And shoot for about 35 gallons per acre or more, anywhere between 35 and 50. As I said, you know, there's a lot of foliage out there. You know, you need to get good coverage both in the top and the bottom of the leaf surface. So by, you know, skimping on the water, you're really not doing yourself any favors. You know, most of these products are mobile, but you know, if you get the product, you know, to where the pest organism is, it's going to control it better than if it has to go around the plant or go through the upper to lower leaf surface. Any other questions about the powdery mildew trial? It's really starting to get going. Now, you saw those untreated checks. That was taken a week ago, and they were kind of getting up there. You know, the averages didn't seem that high, you know, in the mid 30s, but you look at individual leaves, you know, one is 100, and then, you know, another one, you know, is like 25. And so you kind of average that, it doesn't seem so bad. But yeah, there's some leaves getting crushed with powdery right now. Okay. I think we've kind of beat that one enough.